what I'm going to do is talk about some results in algebraic groups. And at the beginning, I'll talk about algebraic groups in general, but pretty soon I'll start emphasizing reductive groups. I'm not going to discuss proofs at all. I'm just going to list results and maybe talk a little bit about references as well. So to begin with, some basic references on linear algebraic groups, just the general theory. You may be familiar with these references. There's a book by Borel. There's a book by Humphreys. And one by Springer. I'm not giving you the details, and all of them are titled linear algebraic groups. So much of the basic results that I'll talk about are covered in these books. If you have no background in algebraic geometry at all, then probably Humphreys and Springer may be good to look at because they give a lot of background at the beginning. And I'll talk about other references as we go along. So let's take an algebraically closed field. The notion of an algebraic K-group. I'll use boldface letters for these algebraic groups. Is, first of all, it's an algebraic variety over K. And a group, of course. And then we require that the multiplication and inverse maps are morphisms of algebraic varieties. So such that our map given by multiplication from G cross G to G. Of course, mu x y is just the product. And inversion G to G, these two maps are required to be morphisms of algebraic varieties. Okay, so now, of course, my field may vary, but for the purposes of these talks, I'm going to fix K. And I'm just going to talk about algebraic groups. And when I say an algebraic group, I mean an algebraic group relative to this fixed algebraically closed field. Okay. Now, if the variety is affine, that G is an algebraic set, or if you want, a Zariski closed set, in Kn for some n, and this is the case we're actually interested in, we say that G is a linear algebraic group. Could also say affine. Maybe say affine algebraic group, but it's more common to say linear algebraic group. Okay. Now suppose we have two algebraic groups. Then and a map G from G to G prime is a homomorphism of algebraic groups. If two things are satisfied, it should be obvious what you want here. You want C to be a morphism of varieties. And you also want it to be a group homomorphism. Okay, and of course, we can talk about isomorphisms as well. And there, what we want, always we want an isomorphism of varieties and a group isomorphism, obviously. Okay, so we want to be an isomorphism of varieties. And a group isomorphism. Okay, now, of course, when we work with groups, we often work with subgroups. If we take a closed subgroup of an algebraic group, it's automatically an algebraic group. Now, if you have a closed subgroup, say H, of an algebraic group, G, then you can actually look at the coset space and ask what kind of structure that has. So let's look at left cosets. Well, it's not obviously it's not necessarily a group if H is not normal, but you can still ask, is it a variety? It has the structure of a quasi-projective variety. Quasi-projective variety. Okay, so that's just a variety which is a locally closed subset in some projective space. So two standard examples of varieties are affine varieties and projective varieties. This is not quite a projective variety, locally closed. It's an intersection of an open and a closed set in a projective space. Okay, now we're going to be concentrating here on linear algebraic groups, but it's worth noting that when you study linear algebraic groups, you cannot just restrict yourself to affine varieties, because sometimes the structure of G mod H is important. And in particular, it sometimes is important when this is a projective variety. So although I'm not actually going to discuss that in these talks, when you start looking at proofs in results in algebraic groups, you are sometimes working, even if you're only working with linear algebraic groups, you are sometimes working with varieties that are not affine. Okay. Okay, so suppose we have a homomorphism. Of algebraic groups. Okay, then the kernel is a closed subgroup. G. And the image is a closed subgroup of the prime. Okay, now, which means that working with closed subgroups is very useful because we're staying inside the set of algebraic groups. And now, let's suppose that we have an affine variety. So this now I'm not assuming that it's an algebraic group at the moment. Well, let's say over K. And of course we have the associated affine algebra, also known as the coordinate ring. Which just occurs as a quotient of a polynomial ring by some ideal. Okay, so these are just the indeterminates, so we have polynomials and those indeterminates with coefficients in K, and then we have our ideal. Okay, so this is just saying I have an affine algebraic variety. Now, what I want to do, and when you're working with algebraic groups, you're not actually always working with an algebraically closed field. When you start looking at varieties and algebraic groups, you do start in the situation where you have an algebraically closed field, but often when you're actually working with algebraic groups, in representation theory, you are working with a field that is not algebraically closed. So you need to know what it means for an algebraic group to be defined over a field that is not algebraically closed, and what are its rational points over that field. So let me tell you what it means for affine varieties to be defined over subfields of my algebraically closed field. So this little k is a subfield of my fixed algebraically closed field k. We say that the variety x is defined over k, little k, if we look at this ideal I, and that ideal is actually generated by polynomials with coefficients in K, the subfield. So if it's generated by polynomials with coefficients in the subfield, in that case, I is generated by, in fact, its intersection with the polynomial ring over the subfield. Okay. Now, in that case, we can look at Well, we can just take this ring modulo this ideal. So, okay, algebra. This K algebra here is called a K structure. And also, if we go back and look at the original coordinate ring, we can just get it from, and then we'll call this, here, left this notation out, here, just give it this name, here, and we can get the original coordinate ring from the K coordinate ring, say, by tensoring. So, tensor over little k with the larger field. Okay, so now you can actually talk about varieties which are not affine and talk about what it means to have a K structure there, but it's more technical and we won't need that anyhow, so I'm not going to talk about that. And then, of course, if you have, so you can also obviously apply this in the case where X is an algebraic group, and if you have an algebraic group that is defined over K, then you can start looking at, say, or algebraic, various algebraic groups that are defined over this subfield, and you can start looking at homomorphisms, and it will become important whether when you're interested in the K structure, which homomorphisms are defined over the field K as well. And at some point, you have to go, once you know the structure of the algebraic groups over the algebraically closed field, then you have to see which results carry over to non-algebraically closed fields, and we'll be looking at that in the case of reductive groups later in the lectures. Okay, so X and X primed are algebraic varieties defined over K in the subfield K. A morphism V from X to X primed is defined over K or is a K morphism. You like a shorter way to say it? If there is a homomorphism CK star such that the algebra homomorphism C star at the level of the coordinate rings over the algebraically closed field. So we always have this C star associated to any morphism, such that this actually is, remember that we have this tensor here. So this homomorphism defining K is actually equal to CK star. Okay, so on the first coordinate, it's really CK star. Okay, or if you want, just say, look at C and look at the coordinate functions. They should all, coordinate functions of C should all have coefficients in the top field K. In that subfield. Is my writing large enough for people at the back of the room? Okay. All right. And then once I have something defined over K, then I can say what are the rational points. Well, we have capital X sitting as a closed subset of the affine space, so we can just intersect. Take our X and intersect with little kn. And now that is what we call the k-rational points. Okay. All right. So if we have this setup here and we have a linear algebraic group, we say it's defined over k. It's defined over k as a variety, or we might say it's a k group. Linear algebraic group, which is defined over k, little k, we call k group. Oh, whoops. Well, of course, what do I mean by defined over k? Well, I should say as a variety, but also I want the morphisms to be defined over K. So as a variety, it should be defined over K. And the morphisms attached to multiplication and inversion should be defined over K also. So mu and iota are also defined over K. Okay, so that's what I mean to say when I say a linear algebraic group is defined over K. I want these two conditions. And in that case, we'll just call it a K group. Okay. So now suppose we had a homomorphism of K groups. And it's defined over K, then the image of phi is defined over K. But the kernel might not be. Might not be defined over K. So in these lectures, we're first going to look at structure of reductive groups over the algebraically closed field that we started with. And then we're going to, assuming we have time, look at what happens when we look at a subfield, what kind of results carry over to the k-rational points of that reductive group. So as I go through the lectures, every once in a while, I'll be listing a bunch of results for algebraic groups, and then there'll be comments thrown in here and there about what happens over subfields. Okay, now, of course, we have a notion of irreducibility. not assuming that my varieties that I start with are irreducible. So the variety is irreducible if it cannot be expressed as union of two proper closed subsets. Now, any algebraic variety is a union of irreducible ones. Do that for any algebraic group. We can, we also want the no containment here. So we don't want xi to be contained in xj. In any unique way, if I have this condition here, in a unique way, and the xi are what we call the maximal irreducible subsets of X. And when I talk about maximal, what I mean is this is relative to inclusion. Of course, you have an order given by inclusion, so relative to inclusion. And the xi's are called the irreducible components. Okay, so now suppose you take an algebraic group. What can you say about irreducible components of an algebraic group? One of the irreducible components of this variety is going to contain the identity element of the group. G0 of G containing the identity element. I'm going to write my identity elements as 1 instead of E. Okay. So at first, it's just an irreducible component of the variety. But actually, it's a closed normal subgroup. So it's also an algebraic group. And also the cosets of G0 in G are the irreducible components. And you also No, the G0 is the connected component of the identity. And another fact, if you have a closed subgroup of G and it has a finite index, then it must contain the connected component of the identity. H is a closed subgroup G, and H has a finite index in G. You must contain, H must contain G0. Okay, so for a linear algebraic group, since G0 is the connecting component of the identity, irreducibility is the same as connectedness. Normal to refer to an irreducible linear algebraic group as a connected linear algebraic group. People just use the terminology connected rather than irreducible. You can ask, how does this behave relative to homomorphisms? You have a homomorphism of linear algebraic groups, then you can ask what happens when you apply it to the identity component of the first group. How does that relate to the identity component of the other group? So on. So if you have a homomorphism of algebraic groups, then, not surprisingly, you apply it to the identity component of G, you will get the identity component. I should be careful, I guess. In the identity component of G prime. And also, now, suppose your group was actually defined over a subfield of K. Subfield little k, then the identity component will also be G0 is also defined. Okay. All right. Okay, so now we have a notion of dimension. And actually, we'll just define it in terms of the identity component. The dimension of an algebraic group is the dimension of G0. So we're working with linear algebraic groups, and so in that case, we're going to be talking about the transcendence degree of the field here. So because G0 is irreducible, when we look at our coordinate ring, it's actually an integral domain because the associated ideal is prime. And we look at its field of fractions. And it's an extension of K. And we ask, what is the transcendence degree of that extension? And that's the maximum, you know, looking at algebraically independent elements, the number of elements, and largest number of elements in any algebraically independent set. So it's a standard notion, just to do with the varieties, really, not so much to do with the groups. Okay, now I've been calling affine algebraic groups, which happen to be affine varieties, linear algebraic groups, and there's a very nice result about linear algebraic groups, which says that they are, in fact, subgroups of general linear groups in a nice way. And that maybe is the reason why they're called linear algebraic groups. So if you have a linear algebraic group, then it's isomorphic, not just in an abstract way, but as an algebraic group. To a closed subgroup of the algebraic group GL and K, positive integer N. Okay, so I'm going to discuss this in a second. You take the n by n matrices, those coefficients in K and non-zero determinant, that is a linear algebraic group. And so there exists some n for which you can embed G in a nice way in a GLN. Okay, so now a couple of examples. One, we could just take G to be K certainly is a Zariski closed subset of itself, with addition as my product, and inversion is just minus. The usual notation here for this is G sub A. So it's the additive group. It's connected and has dimension 1. Okay. Don't have room for the next one. So having said that a linear algebraic group is isomorphic to a closed subgroup of some general linear group, then when I write down the linear algebraic groups that in examples, we'll always be seeing them as closed subgroups of some general linear group. So first take n by n matrices with entries in K. Matrices, entries in K. I'll use this notation throughout. Now let's look at general linear groups. Well, as a set, it's just the set of matrices in here with non-zero determinant. I could write it that way. Okay. But if you want to identify it with a closed subset of affine space, you write it slightly differently. With subset. Let's take pairs. Gx, where G is an N-by-N matrix with entries in the field K. X is an element, OK, and subject to the condition that the determinant of G times X is 1. Which, of course, then forces X to be non-zero and the determinant to be non-zero, of course. And so you can see that sitting inside. Of course, this is just Kn squared. So it sits inside Kn squared plus K, which is, of course, Kn squared plus 1. Okay. And the affine algebra, or coordinate ring, is, well, you're going to have some indeterminates corresponding to matrix entries, which I'll denote xij. So I and j are running between 1 and n. And then we'll have one, the determinant inverse. Okay. All right, now the dimension. And it is connected. Okay, now in this particular case, n equals 1, well, what is this group? It's just non-zero elements in the field. If n equals 1, then we see that GL1K is just K cross, K with 0 removed. And we, the usual notation for this group is G sub M, M for multiplicative, I think. Okay. So now there's a connected group of dimension 1, and here's a connected group of dimension 1, and those are all of the connected groups of dimension 1. So I'll just make that comment here. G A and G M are the only connected groups of dimension 1. Another example, I won't write it down, is SLNK, where you have matrices whose determinant is 1. Well, you could just say that's the kernel of the determinant, and it's obvious that the determinant is a homomorphism of algebraic groups from GLNK to GM, and so its kernel is going to be a closed subgroup, and therefore it's a minimal algebraic group. I'll write down another example. Of a classical group okay, so again n is a positive integer and I sub n will denote the n by n identity matrix. One's in a diagonal and zeros everywhere else. The identity element of GLN. Now let's write down a 2n by 2n matrix. I'm going to call it J. I'm going to try and make this consistent with examples that I do later. So put 1's here. This is n by n. Okay, so this is an n. And minus 1's here. Okay, and anywhere you don't see anything, it's 0. So minus ones, ones, and then zeros everywhere else. Okay, this is a skew symmetric matrix. And it's also obviously invertible. Right, it's transpose. I'll always use a superscript T on the left to denote transpose. Is it minus itself? And let's look at the following group. F symplectic group, 2nk. Now, some people write this as spnk, so when you're reading, you have to be careful because there are different conventions. But I'm always using a 2n because that's the convention that I use. it's really because the size of the matrices is 2n by 2n. But anyway, so you first look at... let's just take it in GL2n. Okay, and then satisfying the following condition. The transpose of G times J times G gives you back J. Okay. And this is what we call symplectic group. The 2n by 2n symplectic group. And this will come up again in later lectures. It is one of the examples I'm going to look at. It's actually a reductive group. And actually, GL2n is also a reductive group. Actually, SP2n is semi-simple. It's also something that we'll talk about later. Okay, and you can see other kinds of groups in this way. Here I had a matrix that was skew symmetric. You could take a symmetric matrix, and you'll get what we call an orthogonal group. you can express these in terms of bilinear forms. You can express these groups as fixed points of involutions of general linear groups if you want. And you can come up with all sorts of examples. And they appear all over the literature. You won't run out of examples if you look through the literature. And this is what what we call the classical groups. Okay. All right. So now I want to talk about Jordan decompositions in the new algebraic groups. Okay, so this is actually quite easy to do because we can put our group inside our general linear group. So a matrix X, n by n matrix with k, n is just some positive integer, is semi-simple if, well, it's diagonalizable. Some of the results for general linear groups are just really coming from linear algebra. Right, so there exists some matrix such that if I conjugate my original X by G, I get a diagonal matrix. X is, we're doing this in the group, so I want to say what unipotent is. It's unipotent if X minus the identity is nilpotent. N by N identity is nilpotent. Which just means some power of X minus the identity is zero. X minus IN. Okay, so if we take an element in the algebraic group GLNK, then we can easily convince ourselves that it is a unique way to express it as a product of a semisimple element and a unipotent element, which commute with each other. Now to be actually invertible. For the definition of semisimple, I didn't need it to be invertible. Okay, but now I'm going to assume it is. Then there exists, let's call it XF and XU. X S semisimple, X U unipotent, X being a product of X S and X U, but X S and X U commute, so that's the same as X U, X S. Okay? This is really linear algebra. Okay, so furthermore, X S and XU are uniquely determined. Okay, now suppose we have a linear algebraic group. It's obvious what we're going to do. We can see it as being isomorphic to a subgroup of some general linear group. Okay, so let's do that. Let's choose N and an injective homomorphism of linear algebraic groups. P P to GLN K of linear algebraic groups . All right, now we're going to take an element in my group and I want to talk about its Jordan decomposition . Okay, well I can apply phi to G. Get a Jordan decomposition of phi of G in the general linear group GLN, and that will pull back to a Jordan decomposition of the element G. Okay. So a few things you would need to know. For example, suppose you take phi of G and you take the semisimple part that's an element of GLN K, you would like to know that's actually in the image of phi, which it actually is. Okay, so phi of GS and phi of GU. Now here I'm thinking just the same thing I just did above, X is equal to phi of G, the semisimple part of phi of G in the general linear group, the unipotent part of phi of G in the general linear group. Okay, these are actually in the image of phi. And so I'm going to let GS be the inverse image of this, right? Such that phi of GS equals phi of GS and GU, inverse image of phi of GU. These are elements of G. Okay, so I'm going to call those the semi-simple part of G. And the unipotent part I'm just about to do that. I mean, that's the obvious question. Now, the phi and the GLN are not unique. There could be several different ways of seeing your algebraic group as isomorphic to a subgroup of a general linear group. But in fact, even though the way I define the GS and the G sub U in terms of phi, they are unique. If you change the phi and the GLN, you will still get the same GS and GU. Okay, so then it actually makes sense to say GS is the semi-simple part of G. Right? So note, GS and GU are independent of phi and n. Okay. Now, of course, we will have because we have the commuting property on the GLN side, we will also have that on the G side, because whatever phi we chose was inductive, right? And we also have uniqueness. Okay. If we say that we can express G as a product of a semisimple matrix with a unit potent matrix where those two matrices commute, there's only one way to do that. Okay. So GS and GU are unique. And so this decomposition here is what we call the Jordan decomposition of the element G. Okay, question? Okay, so now what if my group was defined over some subfield of my original algebraically closed field? What about the semi-simple and unipotent part? How does the Jordan decomposition work on the subfield? If my original field is perfect, which it will be if it's got characteristic zero, and I have a subfield of the original field, and we had a K group to begin with, then suppose I started with something that was actually in the K rational points of the group. That will imply that the semi-simple part and the unit potent part are also in the K rational points. Which gives us a Jordan decomposition inside the group of K rational points if we're actually working in a situation where our field is perfect, and often we are. In general, I think you need to have some finite extension of K here. If you don't assume that the original algebraically closed field is perfect, there might be some finite degree inseparable extension of K here. That will not be an issue for us. Okay, and then another thing that's useful to note relative to Jordan decompositions is that they are preserved by homomorphisms of linear algebraic groups. That's not really that surprising, considering the way that we produce them. But I'll mention it anyhow. If G and G prime are linear algebraic groups, and we have a homomorphism, linear algebraic groups, then we took an element in G and we applied phi to G, and we looked at the semi-simple part of phi of G, we would get the same thing as if we first took the semi-simple part of G and then applied phi to that. And similarly for the unipotent part. Okay. All right, so that is sort of the end of the list of basic facts about algebraic groups that I wanted to cover. The next thing I'm going to do is talk a little bit about Lie algebras of linear algebraic groups. Not today, tomorrow. And then get into things like what are tori in algebraic groups and what are their properties, and then start looking at structure of reductive groups. So next time there will be still some general material about linear algebra, Lie algebras, and then after that I'm really going to start looking at reductive groups. And I'll give you more references as we go along in the material.